The date is August 25th, 1989, and we're watching Little Monsters. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
I Used to Like This One, a show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Maurice to my Brian Stevenson.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So this week we're looking back at August 1989 when the movies in theaters were The Adventures of Milo and Otis, The Abyss, A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, Uncle Buck, and of course, our movie for today, Little Monsters. I've been excited about this one, which earned $793,775 on a $7.1 million budget.
Wow.
Yep.
Howie Mandel's probably still paying that one off.
Deal or no deal, Howie.
Yeah. But, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, I have two this week. The first is, they cause all the trouble, but you'll have all the fun.
Ah.
Yeah?
Sure.
Okay. I guess. Second up, I kind of like this one. Some friends can be real monsters, and some monsters can be real friends.
That one I like. That's inventive, and I like the play on words.
Yeah. Yeah, but both not very good descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
All right. Brian's whole life has been turned upside down. His parents' marriage is falling apart, and in response, they've uprooted the family and moved to a new house in a new city where Brian has to go to a new school and has no friends. One day, shortly after settling in, weird prank-like things start happening around the house, and Brian catches all the heat. He pins the blame on his brother Eric, who in turn claims to have seen a monster in his room the night before. In an attempt to prove to Eric that there's no such thing as monsters, Brian bets him that he can spend a night in Eric's room. During his second attempt, Brian finds himself face-to-face with a playful monster named Maurice, and the two of them bond over shared interests despite their age difference and supernatural status. Maurice takes Brian into the shadow world underneath the beds of our world where all the little monsters live. Everything is going smoothly. Maurice teaches Brian the ins and outs of monstering until one day, while endeavoring to terrify a baby, Brian learns that he is becoming a monster when he gets hit by light and starts to shrink. Things go from bad to worse when the evil monster Snick has captured Eric at the request of his master, quote-unquote, boy, in order to force Brian to sacrifice himself and stay in the Shadow Realm and become a monster forever. Now it's up to Brian and Maurice, along with some other kids I don't have time to detail right now, to save Eric and escape the shadows before the sun comes up and they're trapped forever. Will they do it? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Now, way, way back in episode 2, we did The Wizard, Fred Savage as a child, just like this movie. And I remember back in the day, I loved this one as much as I loved The Wizard. Like, this was one that definitely got a number of viewings at my house. I haven't seen this in a really long time, though. And I kind of forgot how dark it can be. But, Colin, for you, Little Monsters, do you have any history with Little Monsters?
I don't think so. I had thought that I had seen this movie before. I think I've just seen snippets of it here and there, like when it's been reran on TV back in the day, but I don't think I'd actually ever sat down and watched the entire thing.
Okay. You know what I find funny is, you know, I gave you a little bit of a hard time when we watched Drop Dead Fred. And this is kind of the Drop Dead Fred that I watched growing up, whereas Drop Dead Fred was yours, you know? So
yeah, I'm actually so glad to hear you say that, because that was my first thought as this movie started going on, I was like, this is just a, it reminded me so much of Drop Dead Fred.
And I mean, it's, I almost have to apologize to you for what a hard time I gave Drop Dead Fred, because it's like, you know, I was very fond of a very similar movie. Like, I still didn't click with Drop Dead Fred, but it's like, yeah, but here I am throwing the exact same thing back at you with Little Monsters. So it's just, you know, it's, it is interesting. especially with how much we've been doing this show, how often I contradict myself when it comes from one week to another, where I say I really don't like that about one movie, and then the very next movie I'm applauding it for the exact same thing. You know, like,
it's all about context.
Yeah, I suppose so. But let's jump into Little Monsters, directed by Richard Greenberg, who has a 3 total credits for directing an episode of Tales of the from the Crypt and a movie called The Process. So, you know, I don't know whether Little Monsters killed his career. He works in other aspects. He does some producing and stuff like that too. Produced by John Davis and Andrew Licht. I don't know. And Jeffrey A. Mueller. And it's written by Terry Rossio and Ted Elliott. Ted Elliott had a couple of pretty good credits. He worked on Shrek. He worked on Pirates of the Caribbean. So, you know,
nice.
This is earlier in his career, though. So we'll see. And so, like you mentioned in the opening, like, they've just moved to this place. Like, he says in his opening monologue that, like, they moved here about a month ago. But he's got some really tight friends, even if he's been there for a month. I don't understand why this kid that's supposedly lonely, he's just, like, all of a sudden he's immediately best friends with this little redheaded girl. They like pairing Fred Savage up with redheaded girls, that's for sure. But yeah, it's just...
Yeah, it's weird that him and that girl, like, it's almost like maybe they moved across town?
Yeah.
Because him and that girl seem to... have known each other. Like, it doesn't seem like it's first day at school. Like, they seem to already know each other. And then Eric has his best buddy, Teddy?
Is that what something like that. Yeah, I forget.
Yeah, and they're like best buds. So it's strange that they've recently moved, but they have these solidified relationships.
Yeah, but meanwhile, the bully, Ronnie Coleman, who... You know, shout out to Devin Rattray, who is Buzz from Home Alone. He seemingly seems to be meeting this Brian for the first time. But yeah, he seems tight with this girl taking pictures of her plants. However, he doesn't know about her project taking pictures of the plants. So, like, that seems like a first day thing. Like, it's just like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, you know. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
One of the things that stands out to me or stood out to me immediately about this movie is the tone is all over the place. Like, when you suggest, like, I don't know, not when you suggest, but, like, my thought about Little Monsters was that it was going to be more, you know, just outrageously funny in, like, a Goonies or, like, even what's that, Monster Squad?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I thought that's the type of movie that I was going into, but you're immediately met with, and maybe it's just because I'm an adult, and I'm married, but I couldn't help but constantly look at the parents' relationship. Like, it always.
Yes, so did I.
Like, I was always just thrown off by, I don't know how else to say it. It was too real.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It was.
Oh, yeah.
It was too real, and just. It sucked any comedy out of the movie.
Yeah, like, yeah, the mom throwing out lines, well, you're always tired, that's why you don't touch me, and it's like, whoa!
Yeah.
What? Like, I don't know if that's verbatim what it was, but yeah. It was something very, very close to that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it just, yeah, and it's funny that, like, you had mentioned Monster Squad, and I mentioned The Wizard, because here we are now talking about, like, our third movie that seems to have, like, these tragic marital stories happening in them.
Yeah.
You know, like, because Monster Squad, the parents were all squabbling as well there. Because he always went to work. And then, you know, The Wizard, you know, you had the weird death of the child that split up the parents somehow. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's just, it's an 80s thing. Like, where is that? You know, like you always hear people these days when it comes to representation that's on screen and everything like that saying, I like seeing myself on screen because growing up, I never saw myself reflected in a movie. Is that what the problem was in the 80s? Is that you have all these broken home children that are now wanting to see themselves on screen and they're trying to normalize it by, you know, showing it in movies? Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. It was just, yeah, it was too real for me. And I kept thinking, like, man, I'm sad for these kids. Like, yeah. I didn't feel sad for Brian because he was, like, had no friends or whatever, which I think was kind of, like, what they were going for. I was like, I feel sad for you because, like, your parents have, like, a really bad relationship. And it seems, and even his younger brother, like, it was the same thing. It's like, I just felt really sad for the kids.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that I love the stunt casting of having Ben Savage as Eric.
Yeah, I like that.
I do like that they actually got to play brothers in this movie. This is Ben Savage's debut movie.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought that was really cool.
And you can definitely tell at a couple points, though, where, like, he spikes the lens of the camera a couple times. Like, he stares right down the lens a few times where it's just like, yeah, this is clearly your first movie.
Yeah.
But, hey, good on him, though. He had some hard stuff that he had to do.
Did the Savage Brothers, were they ever in a movie together again?
Hmm.
I know they did an episode of, like, Fred was in an episode of Boy Meets World.
Yeah, of course he was. No, not that I'm not overly versed on the whole Savage filmography.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they have, but off the top of my head, I'll say no, but I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah. I forgot that Fred Savage was, I can't remember if we talked about it in the past, but were you, when we did The Wizard, but were you a big Wonder Years fan?
I was, yes. I don't know if I was like a diehard.
Okay.
I've never revisited the series though.
Yeah, me neither.
So like I watched it all when it first aired and I might not have even seen every episode. So but I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe Ben Savage even appeared on there for an episode or something too.
I think he
played an Arnold cousin or something.
Yeah. I was a diehard and I've rewatched the series a couple times. For Boy Meets World, but
yeah,
so it was cool to see Ben Savage, like yeah. little tiny baby Ben Savage in this movie.
Yeah, but still with the curls.
Yeah, what do they call Brillo head or something? They call him in Boy Meets World.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
even see like I feel like Devin Rattray must have just got typecast to play bullies. Like,
yeah, it seems that way.
I wonder if he was ever... I should look at his filmography. I wonder if he ever had a chance to play, like, a nice guy. Yeah. Although, did he recently just go to prison?
I think I remember hearing something about him having trouble with the law. I don't know if it was full-on prison, but I'm pretty sure there was some sort of scuffle with authority. Yeah, you're right. He's definitely always destined to play the bully. Except for some reason, he does end up becoming part of the gang. And I mean, this has become one of our worst habits, but jumping right to the end of the movie, right at the beginning of the podcast. But that is one thing that I don't understand. I appreciate the fact that he had his moment to take revenge on Devin.
Mm-hmm.
But why Devin is suddenly part, or I guess he's, sorry, Ronnie, I'm calling him Devin, why Ronnie is suddenly part of the gang at the end, and it's like, okay, here we go. That was a bit,
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
Surprising. Yeah.
It's like, did they just think, like, oh, we needed muscle, and he's a tough guy?
Yeah, I guess so. That must be what it is.
Yeah.
Because she had the key to the thing at the school, and... So in the beginning, he sets his alarm for 5 a.m. What the fuck? But like, is that just so that he can watch TV? Is that all he's trying to do is sneak up and watch TV? I don't understand the onion and peanut butter sandwich at 5 a.m. That's my bigger problem.
Yeah, that's fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, I haven't tried it, I guess. Maybe I should give it a shot before I judge, but. Onion and peanut butter doesn't sound appetizing.
No,
to
and
me.
That was a thick ring of onion he put on there.
I'm on board with the 5 a.m. wake up. I remember as a child, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was on weekdays at like 6 in the morning. So I would wake up early sometimes to watch it before I had to get ready for school and catch the bus.
Yeah. Well, see, I used to be up early too, you know, a little bit of Inspector Gadget, a little bit of Tom and Jerry, but I don't think I ever set my alarm for that early in the morning. I was just an early riser.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I was not.
Yeah. Okay.
I do think it's weird that, like, I don't know. Again, with the parents, how, like, why are they so angry that he got up mm-hmm. early? I could understand staying up late.
Yeah.
Like, I could understand staying up past your bedtime and, like, sneaking down, but, like, why is getting up early such a bad thing?
I don't know. Maybe is part of it because he was sneaking the food out of the fridge.
I guess maybe if times are tough.
Because he got pissed off at him for that too. I don't know. Because he's got to focus his anger somewhere other than just the mom.
Yeah. It's strange for me to see Dan. Like, I think we've watched a few Daniel Stern movies now. But he's always Marv to me.
I guess he was in more kids movies than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So Eric ends up hearing a monster and he screams and everyone wakes up and everything like that. And now all of a sudden, our hero, Brian Stevenson, is just obsessed with this monster thing. As a parent, I mean, I know they've got their own shit going on and maybe this is why they have their own shit going on. But he starts sawing the legs off of beds, and the mom is just like, oh, yeah, that's just Brian sawing the leg off a bed again. I mean, he's doing, I mean, there's some impressive engineering going on, first of all, from Brian. Like, he's obviously a bit of a hidden genius here.
Yeah.
But why aren't the parents a little angrier about the lengths that Brian is going to in his new monster obsession?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're right. Maybe it's kind of, they're just, or maybe they just think he's like acting out. Like, I know with Eric, like, they assume that, you know, he woke up because
they were fighting.
So I think with Brian it might be something like that. Like, I think they're trying to keep it together. And they but I mean, you probably have to recognize the effect that all the arguing is having on their kids. So I would imagine they're just kind of like, well, it's weird because it's kind of like they're saying, like, as long as he's just destroying his own stuff, we don't care. But as soon as like stuff spills all over the dad, or the dad runs over, and it's not even that Brian's bike got destroyed, it's that the bike hit damaged his vehicle. That's why he's mad.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it's you know, they're going to get upset and ground him or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and I mean, there's where I really started seeing the parallel with Drop Dead Fred, was like running over the bike or putting the handprints on the doors. And it's like, oh man, like, you know, they're just being assholes.
Yeah.
but I mean, maybe it's just the perspective of, because I enjoyed this movie as a child, that I'm like, hell yeah, I'm in their corner, which is why you watching Drop Dead Fred as a child, you're like, yeah, absolutely, I'm there with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Viewing it as an adult definitely is a weird sense, that's for sure.
Yeah, I found watching this movie, because what I would be curious for you, when you were a kid, like, how did you feel about Maurice?
I thought he was hilarious.
You thought, like, he was, like, a hilarious, cool guy? I found, like,
yeah,
watching it for the first time as an adult, I was like, how did Howie Mandel ever work again? Like, I think Maurice he's one of the worst characters I've ever seen on screen.
Well, see, and this is one of those situations, though, where my comparison to Drop Dead Fred, this is where it does differ, is that with Drop Dead Fred, I found him obnoxious. With Little Monsters, I found him obnoxious. I no longer saw the endearing, hilarious side of him.
Yeah.
Like, and with Drop Dead Fred, you did still see some of that. But yeah, I mean, with this, it's kind of like, oh, I don't get it. I don't, I, he's not funny.
Yeah.
And I used to love Howie Mandel comedy. Like, I used to, back in the day when he used to, like, blow up a surgical glove using just his nose, that was part of his comedy act.
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, I used to love Howie Mandel stand-up. And then he went bald and he stopped being as goofy. But this was still when he was goofy, back when he still had hair.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. As soon as Maurice came on the screen, I kind of... My two questions were, like, what's the deal with this guy? Like, just the choices he's making as an actor, even. I just kind of was like, it's just weird. Like, it didn't vibe with me as an adult watcher.
Yeah.
But then I was also kind of like, is this a kid's movie? Like, there's a lot of questionable language and references.
Yeah.
And like overt sexual references and all that, that I was kind of like, man, I can't believe this was marketed to kids.
Oh yeah. Like he made some comment about the Playboy Channel at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no parents down here. If you want to watch the Playboy Channel, no parents. Yeah. And the question I had about Maurice, and I mean, this is because I know it's Howie Mandel and I knew he was an adult. Is he supposed to be a teenager though?
Yeah.
Like, is he supposed to be like a young monster?
Yeah, there's that aspect too of like what it's kind of just. I don't really feel like you ever get to know what Maurice's actual deal is.
Yeah,
or even like how he became a monster, because it seems like in the mythology that they're kind of creating, the idea is that like all monsters are like kids who just got trapped before.
Yeah, missing kids.
Yeah, just missing kids before the sun came up.
So all the kids on milk cartons. Are the kids that are, or are these monsters, you know?
That seems
like how it's implied. But yeah, I wasn't sure whether he was supposed to be a kid. There was the part where his horn was broken that I'm just like, why the fuck is no one doing anything about that? What's the story behind the broken horn? I don't remember seeing it get snapped.
Yeah.
Like, it just, yeah, I did have a lot of questions when it came to Maurice that went unanswered.
Yeah. Yeah, he was... It's also kind of weird because in reading this... I read the synopsis on Wikipedia afterwards, and they mentioned that... I don't know if I just missed this, but they almost made it sound like... It's like Maurice's job was to convince Brian to become a monster.
Yeah.
I thought they were just kind of, like, becoming, like, just friends. Similar to, like, a drop-dead Fred scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought there was going to be more about, like, you know...
Him trying to recruit...
Yeah, like,
yeah,
he's actively
recruiting Brian.
Yeah, or like, you know, like maybe Maurice is kind of going to learn how to be like not a monster again, like not maybe not scare babies or like maybe be nice.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
you know, he kind of just like that's his job. Like his job is to scare.
Is it possible that the world of Monsters, Inc. is what happens after the events of this movie? Is there like, whoa, 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 okay, we need a more industrial idea of how to get these scares. That's how they came up with the whole door situation. You know, we can't be dragging people down here. We have to tell, you know, that's why everyone thinks that children are toxic in that movie. Because they're like, whoa, 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 Maurice fucked it up for everyone. We have to now make everyone think that you can't go near a child.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Almost every review I read links those two movies together.
Oh, so okay.
Maybe, I mean, I think that Monsters, Inc. kind of does it a little bit better, but
yeah,
you can definitely see the parallels.
See, because then the ultimate story that it ends up being told is the fact that no, but we find out that laughter is what the monsters really need, you know? So all this terrifying shit that happens in this movie, it turns out that it's just laughter.
Yeah, because the way this movie ends, like, there isn't any resolution for the monsters.
Yeah.
They're still down there monstering, and theoretically, the kids escape, but they could go back down anytime they feel like.
Mm-hmm. And I like how it turns out that anything can be a bed, even a guy sleeping on the beach. Like, it's just, you know, it's like...
That seemed lazy.
Yeah, so it's like, so anytime I lie down on my floor, I could potentially have a monster crawl up underneath me. That's terrifying.
Yeah, even though, again, this is all at the end of the movie, but the thing that I initially thought was absolutely hilarious is they spend, like, the last 5 minutes of the movie running from staircase to staircase trying to outrun the sun.
Yeah.
And then they finally escape and they make it out on the beach. And then they just decide, we're going to run into the ocean because that's safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm wondering what the conversion rate of, like, monster land miles to actual miles are, because, you know, they make it to the West Coast pretty, I don't know. Like, is it slow or fast? I can't quite tell whether they're doing a good job of outrunning the sun at this point. Did they actually have to run hundreds of miles?
And also, like, why do you have to stay on your own continent? Couldn't you have just ran to London or, like, you know, to England somewhere? And got in the dark? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe it's you have to run with the rotation of the Earth.
You must. That's got to be what it is, yeah.
Probably one of my favorite things about the movie is the way that the underground works. I thought that was clever to have, like, the staircases from under the bed and, like, how they could go from house to house. Like, I thought...
Yeah.
It was very Tim Burton-esque. But...
See, and it's funny because there was a part of me that thought that the production design was a little bit lazy. It felt like it was just like someone went and just raided a bunch of used pallets from the back of a Home Depot or something.
Yeah, sure.
But I see what you mean. Yeah, like it's a neat way of doing it. Mm-hmm. It's just I've found it just a little plain.
Yeah. Yeah, I think could have been more... Like, I think if you had done it now, like, they probably would have utilized more green screen.
Because yeah, a little bit of depth.
Yeah,
there's
clearly,
no depth.
It's clearly shot in, like, a soundstage with, yeah, like you said, zero
black
depth.
Black walls.
Yeah. So I think if they did it now, you would have, yeah, the green screen to add some depth and some largeness to that underworld. But I still thought it was kind of a cool idea to just explain how they get underneath, the whole idea of, you know, the monster under the bed that you are afraid of when you're a kid and all that. I don't know if they ever explain it, but the one thing I didn't really understand was what the deal was with the like shooting stars. Like I didn't know what those were.
No, neither did I. Yeah, that was the only thing that they added to the production, because they probably watched the dailies and went, well, we're just in a black room, so maybe we need a little sparkle, a little flair. But no, I have no idea what they were actually supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do like his plan to catch Maurice, though, in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like I mentioned, he sawed off the legs, but I like how he very... How does Maurice not know that this very deliberately lined up row of Doritos is a trap?
I mean, to be fair, he doesn't seem like the sharpest knife in the drawer by any means, so...
Well, that's true.
He's just all base instincts, just Doritos and TV.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of wonder if there's some weird... Is, like, the idea behind the monsters, it's like... Is the moral of the story that children need discipline? Because it's essentially the monsters are just undisciplined children. Like, you go into the monster world and it's like, there's no parents to tell you what to do. You can eat whatever you want, watch as much TV as you want, read Playboy magazines.
Yeah, it's that island in Pinocchio.
Yeah. It's
like, yeah.
And then in, like, the real world, it's like, yeah, you have all the you know, his parents are kind of riding him and all that kind of stuff. I would be curious to know if there's like a deeper, I don't really think it comes across all that well, but I could see if maybe there's some sort of deeper meaning that there's meant to be in the difference between those two worlds.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. But you know what I find funny? You mentioned the fact that he likes eating and he likes TV. And one observation that I made is that there is the scene where we've got the TV that he's watching, and it's actually, it's a Sony, or no, it's a Sharp TV. But then when Maurice, like, hides back under the bed and throws the remote back out, it's a Sony remote.
Ooh.
Yeah, so someone really fucked up in the continuity, you know, prop department. However, I tried to shoehorn it in with Doritos, but instead, we're going to use the TV. It's time for Sponsorship Corner. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Little Monsters is brought to you by Sharp and Sony Electronics, Polaroid cameras, Murray Mayflower Worldwide Movers, the sports teams of the Boston Red Sox, Boston Celtics, New York Yankees, and Baltimore Orioles, Starter Sportswear, Coho Hockey Sticks, Cooper Baseball Gloves, Nike, Parker Brothers, Sunbacker Tents, Doritos and Lay's Chips, Mountain Dew Pepsi and Cherry Coke, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Ford, General Electric, Ever Ready, and Die Hard Batteries, Casio Watches, National Geographic Magazine, and Raggedy Ann. Plus a special shout out to Peanut Butter and Onion Sandwiches. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, the way I say and Cherry Coke, that's in the cafeteria. Like, there's these kids that are drinking these very obvious Cherry Coke cans. Yeah. But I think that's the same scene where Ronnie ends up eating the cat food and drinking piss. Oh, like, that was a prank that I thought went a little bit too far. Good on Ronnie for identifying the piss really fast.
Yeah.
But Brian needs a poker face, like, because he and his little girlfriend are sitting over on the bleachers, and as soon as he drinks the piss, he's like, ha, 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 piss on the teacher, and shit like this. It's like, dude, keep it cool. Like, Ronnie's going to start suspecting you, because he's yelling around the cafeteria going, you know, who pissed in my apple juice?
Yeah, I thought that was a bit much.
Yeah,
but I mean, it was super funny. I think one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie is when it's like the montage scene. So it's first you see Brian and Maurice going and doing all these different pranks.
Yep.
But then I love the scene like the next day that's just a close up on all these kids and their parents like basically berating them for like what things that the monsters did and all that, and just the reactions are so good. So funny. Yeah.
It's kind of like when we watch Kindergarten Cop and it's like all the kids that are telling what their daddy does for a living. You know, just that nice little montage of all these different reactions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is one moment that I thought was possibly a little problematic is that there's the point where Maurice pulls down Brian's pants and another monster says, "Nice ass."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Whoa, not even my mom sees me in my boxer shorts." But I don't think you should be commenting on this 11-year-old child or 12. How old is he in this movie? I didn't even look that up. But still, it's like, you know,
I'm guessing he's like, yeah, 12 or 13.
Yeah, you shouldn't be telling him he has a nice ass.
No.
Unless these monsters are kids. I don't know. Is this the Lost Boys and, you know, Peter Pan? I don't know.
I feel like, yeah. I feel like they have to be kids-ish. But, I mean, but it's just hard because Maurice, like, in no way looks like a kid unless, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the fact that, like, the ultimate villain of the story is this boy.
Yeah, boy.
The aptly named boy. And he seems to be an adult, but is he supposed to be a child? I mean... Yeah, that's...
Yeah, it's like, it would have been, like, I would have liked to see the result of getting trapped in the monster world. Like, what does it do to you physically, like, to become a monster? Like, Brian, because Brian, when he gets hit by the light, like, he shrinks or whatever, but, like...
Yeah.
But it would have been cool to, like, expand on the monster world a little bit more to see, like... To show, like, a kid getting trapped, or, like, maybe Maurice brings Brian down, and he meets another kid, and the other kid gets, like, trapped down there, and then he becomes a monster, and then you kind of see what happens to him. Or maybe that's what they do with Boy. But even Boy, when you meet him before he gets his face ripped off, like he still looks like a man, not a child.
Yeah, except that he's dressed like Angus Young from AC/DC.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like Yeah. Oh, and now I just thought of another thing. Like, going back to the apple juice prank for a second, no one's, like, Ronnie's not going to notice how badly wrapped his sandwich is. Like, because they do a really bad job of substituting that for the cat food, you know, or no one's going to notice the sticky floor, because when you were trying to chug that apple juice, most of it was like, it was like Cookie Monster eating on Sesame Street. Like,
yeah, you're not going to see the mess. And I mean, if he's that bad at drinking apple juice, I feel like he probably wasn't that great at hitting the bottle when he was pissing in it. So there's probably like a massive puddle on the floor of monster piss.
Yeah, that's precision work right there. Pissing into a bottle. I've had those days. Come on. You know?
Yeah. I was like, when Brian shrinks, I mean, this is such a thing of the 80s, but I love that he has a book logging like his height and weights for all his ages.
Yeah.
That he could be like, oh, I need to reference to make sure I see like how tall I was before.
Yeah. Yeah, and then runs over to double check on the measuring tape on the wall. You know, yeah, it's. But I guess my parents were much better at keeping a record of my life than I was with my own kids. I mean, your daughter's still young. I hope that you've gotten on a baby book and stuck with it, because I don't know if I actually stuck with it with my youngest child.
I mean, we have like a little bit of stuff, but definitely not. And I think part of it is like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, my parents did some, but it's like, I don't know, I don't really care.
Yeah.
And so I think like, as me, I'm like, well, my daughter's probably not going to care that much. So, and it's also, my daughter literally has a photograph of every day of her life.
Oh, that's true.
For the first
yeah.
year. So, and yeah, she'll be fine if she wants to see how cute she was when she was a kid.
Yeah, exactly. When she gets married that day, you can give her a memory card of every single picture you've ever taken of her. Yeah,
exactly. We'll just be able to make a flip book of her growth chart.
Yeah. You know, one thing I don't understand is there is the part where, like, you know, again, with the montage of them pranking all the children, Maurice ends up taking out our little girlfriend. I do have her name written down. Oh shit, I do. Oh, Kirsten. Kirsten is the little girl. Yeah. But like, Maurice does that whole dog thing. First of all, that's a fucking terrifying prosthetic that he has on his hand, like his eyeless dog. That's gross. But she gets a zero on this assignment. Like, seriously? Like, she still had...
Yeah, just because she doesn't have the paper?
Yeah. She still has evidence of the paper, even. It's like, no, look, like, if we sit here with tape, I can put most of it back together. Like, seriously, just give me a day to retype this. You know, this isn't classic dog ate my homework. Like, it's completely gone. There's nothing left. She had evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets just a straight out zero. It's like, that teacher's a dick.
I feel like, maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but I feel like she had the project there. It was like the paper was just to kind of like verify, like, maybe her like research, or is that wrong? Because I feel like she had already had something to present.
She had all the photos. Yeah.
And then the teacher is like, oh, well, where's your paper? And then she's like, oh, here it is. But I'm like, that's only half the thing. Clearly you can give her, she can't, like, all I'm saying is she can't get a zero. Like, she has everything else.
Turn in the pictures. Okay. Well, you got a 25%. Okay. You know, like, yeah, something's better than nothing, I guess.
Yeah, the teacher's basically like, well, how do I know that you took those pictures? Where's your sources?
But what I find funny is that when they do go to Kirsten's house and he sees that he has a or she has a picture of him up on his mirror, and he's like, ooh, she likes me, right? That's not the picture that he took with her camera.
Mm-hmm.
That is clearly like a posed picture of Fred Savage, but he took a selfie with her camera. Like, continuity people, come on! Berating this movie that's 32 years old.
Yeah, I don't know. They definitely like continuity and what did they call? I guess yeah, like continuity probably wasn't as big of a thing as it is now because back in the day there weren't any podcasts in 1989 just picking over movies with a fine tooth comb to find everything
That's
that was wrong
right.
with them. And clearly most people only watched this movie once in theaters, so.
Yeah. No, I'd say almost nobody watched this movie once in theaters.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting thing I should look up. Like what? Because I mean, I famously, like The Princess Bride also it didn't have a $7 million budget, but I mean,
Yeah.
it didn't do well in theaters. But it was more of
More of a mil more than a million, though, at least.
yeah. But it was more of the VHS release where it kind of found its steam. But I mean, I
Yeah.
guess that's what I don't really know about this movie. Like, was Little Monsters in my mind? I didn't realize until you said that stat, but in my mind, I thought that Little Monsters was a successful film.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, I thought the same thing about Monster Squad too, and that one was also one that only had like a few million dollars earning, right? Like that was another piss poor one. So it's just like, I don't know. These movies I loved as a kid, I guess I wasn't paying attention to the box office back then, you know? So.
Yeah, you were probably better for it.
Okay, so ultimately, this story involves this. This is where I get a little bit lost with the plot. Is this whole bit with Boy and what did you say? I think you said it in your 60 second
Yes.
synopsis. Snick?
Snick, yeah.
Yeah, he's the big monster with no neck. Is that okay? Yeah, like first of all, I want to say that it's very creative of Snick to be able to put out the hide-a-bed to get into the real world to abduct Eric. So we've got the whole montage of Brian going around sawing all the legs off and, you know, sealing up the monster world. But then Snick manages to open up the hide-a-bed, and there we go. That's where I say at the end we find out that everything could be a bed anyway. He didn't even need to go to the. He could have just come out from underneath the couch. Oh, people sleep on couches. But I don't fully understand this whole them wanting to kidnap Eric to get back at Brian. Like, why are they trying to exact revenge on the Stevenson family?
Yeah, I that part, like, I just feel like it comes out of left field. Like, I didn't understand, and that's where, like, I thought maybe I missed something between Maurice or, like, whatever the overall monster agenda is.
Yeah.
Was kind of unclear because to me it's just like Maurice and Brian are having a good time, and then all of a sudden Brian real like I thought it was gonna be more along the lines of Brian realizes like because he's been going down so often that he's becoming a monster, and the story is
Yeah.
gonna be more about him having to say like, "Hey, you're my best bud," kind of like Drop Dead Fred almost, like you're my best bud, but it's time for me to leave you. Like we have to go our separate ways because I don't want to be a monster.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, then all of a sudden Snick and Boy get involved and they abduct Eric and now they're trying to use him as leverage to get Brian to just stay down. But it's like,
Right? Like,
when were you ever interested in him before?
yeah.
I don't know.
I'm sure you could have recruited Ronnie if you really want another kid to convert. Like why is Brian the magical being that they must have for their collection? Like it's just, yeah, I don't know.
Like
It's
yeah,
weird,
it
like.
would have been good if they would have explained like, are the monsters like taking kids and like abducting kids and bringing them under and like, show them in like cages or somewhere down there being like trapped until they become monsters or whatever. And then
Yeah.
I felt yeah, that part of the movie it seemed maybe wasn't as well thought out.
Well, yeah, because we never even see any other kids in this, you know, shadow world. Like they walk through the arcade and all these different places, and Brian is the only kid that's walking through. Everyone else is a monster. I don't know. But yeah, so we get our big showdown where the kids go and break into the school and they go see Boy with their light suits. Or no, first they just come in with a whole bunch of lights. It's the light suit is the second time they come back, because for some reason the first time they show up and it doesn't work because Boy has like toy tanks or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why we're doing the climax of this movie twice, basically. And then on top of that, we then get a very anticlimactic final battle, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, don't forget when they all get thrown in the trash compactor a la Star Wars, which that's what that scene reminded me of.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and sorry, and I completely forgot to say, it's also nice when they decide to take out Snick with a flamethrower. That was pretty awesome. But yeah, it's just, like, this ending to me was really weird, because it's like they all go there, all their, you know, lights get ruined, and then they have to go out again and come back. Like, it's almost like it was just so that they could have more of the coming out from underneath the bed effects or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and they really just wanted that scene, I think, with all the, like, the big lamps, like the big lamp suits to blow Boy away.
And they had to go back and get Ronnie, I guess. Or was Ronnie with them the first time, too?
No, Ronnie.
No.
At first, it's just Kirsten, Eric, and Brian. And then they get, they get thrown in that dungeon. And then they find Maurice. And then they have to, like, melt Maurice to put him under the door so that he can open the door.
Yeah.
And then he helps them escape. And then, for, like, really no reason at all other than they need the numbers, I guess, they go and get Ronnie.
Right, yeah.
And they get this massive portable battery to charge their suits, and then they go back and blow everyone away and save
them. That's right, the big diehard battery cart. I do like the line where they're doing it, where Kirsten is like, "You're good at this. Why do you get Fs in science? Why do you know so much about this kid? Because really, I think you've only known him for like 3 days."
She's privy to his transcript. She got it sent to him.
Because she has the key to the offices and stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
She has the skeleton key for the office. I do like when they were running around. I wrote down one line where it's just like, it's gold. "Oh, we've dissected our last frog. We're stuck. We're monsters." We dissected our last frog? Really? That's what you're going to base your disappointment of being stuck on? Is that, oh man, I'm never going to be able to dissect a frog again.
I will say, in that in the running around scene, I as a big man, I really felt for Ronnie, because I was just like, man, that guy's running with all his might. I would have just been like, leave me behind. Yeah. I can't run from Philadelphia to Arizona to California. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No matter how I don't know what the I like you said I don't know what the
well they the, start off somewhere in New York, don't they?
I thought, like, for some reason I thought they were in they're in Boston. That's where they moved to Boston somewhere, but then I think they go to Philadelphia, and then I just remember Arizona, and then obviously they end up in L.A.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that, though, you know, even though I think that end scene is kind of anticlimactic with how they take out Boy, when they are fighting him, they do definitely try to throw some nightmare fuel at you by having, like, the circular saws in the floor coming towards Brian, or, you know, like, all the toy tanks. Like, it's just like, oh, this is... I watched this as a kid? Really?
That's probably my biggest takeaway watching this movie, is that I don't think I would let my child under 12 years old watch this movie.
No, neither would I.
And I thought it was like a movie for like 6-year-olds going into it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, this is a movie that I probably watched around the same time that I was collecting, like, Garbage Pail Kids and stuff like that. So, I mean, back then, this is right up my alley. But it's just like, ooh, geez, there just wasn't any control over us when we were younger.
Yeah.
Like, everyone always talks about the good old days of being home when the streetlights come on, and it's just like, why can't I let my kids do that? Like, why am I too afraid to do that? Because am I too much of a helicopter parent or something these days, right?
I wonder. I mean, I think it's like information. I think back then, obviously, you didn't have like a 24-hour news cycle, so you didn't know about all the crazy shit going on in the world. Yeah, so people are probably like a little bit more
naive,
just naive and wholesome, I guess.
Yeah, head in the sand.
Although I maintain when I was around like 7 years old, I felt like I was always hearing about kids getting abducted.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, we already talked about, yeah, like the homeless guy, his bed is basically his backpack, and so they all come out of a backpack. I thought that was odd.
Yeah.
Thought it was weird how they first thing they decide to run into the ocean. And then I also thought it was equally as strange, given all the marital problems of the two parents and the fact that they think like Eric has run away due to their issues and all that. It's such a like 80s trope that like they kind of leave it, I feel like, in the idea of like, oh, this distressing event will now have like taught them that, you know, there are bigger problems than whatever's happening between the two of them and their marriage will be mended. And I was just kind of like, I don't know. The movie just, it's a weird movie. That's all I can say about it.
And I mean, and of course, that whole thing, that whole phone call back home is kind of resolved with California. How'd you get in California? Oh, it's a long story. No, fucker, tell me.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so we're at the end of the movie. One thing I don't understand. Okay, just before they climb up onto the beach underneath the homeless guy's backpack or whatever, why are they having this big tearful goodbye from Maurice? Now, the reason I ask this, you know, like, I'm wondering whether killing Boy, like, closed a vortex or something to the monster world. Because it's like, okay, Brian might not be able to come down to Monsterland anymore, but can't you still visit him nightly?
Yeah, I didn't get that either. That was kind of what I was saying. It was like, couldn't you just go down? Like, could you just be like, hey, I'll see you in Boston next week or whatever, see you later.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, I didn't know if something happened that now it's closed off for good. Like, I would assume that's what I meant by, like, there's no resolution in what is actually happening to the monster world. Like, to me, it still seems fine. You just don't have, like, the evil overlord anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that's where something like Monsters, Inc. is so much more satisfying, because you have that moment at the very end where they put the door back together and you've got Boo going, kitty, and it ends that way, right? You know, like Brian should get to see. So I wish I knew whether, like, Maurice has just lost access to Brian now for some reason. And what is that reason then?
Yeah. I was also curious, like, when they come up on the beach, it's for all intents and purposes like day. Like, like, what is the level of light required to be out to close the door?
Yeah.
I thought, like, it would still have to be dark for it to open, but I'm just nitpicking.
apparently dusk or twilight is good enough. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, apparently Ben Savage and Fred Savage have an idea to do a Little Monsters sequel, and Howie Mandel is in. This is from an article I read that came out like 2 weeks ago. So maybe you'll get your answer to what the deal is with Maurice.
Yeah, well, it'll just be a much different performance from Howie Mandel, I think. Not because he's more serious these days, but because I think the amount of touching that he was doing in this movie isn't going to happen anymore.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I'm like, I don't really know how I feel about this movie, I would be open to watching a sequel just because I think Fred Savage is hilarious. Like, if they go full into the comedy, like, I don't know if anybody has seen The Grinder. It's a travesty that show only got one season, but it's amazing, and Fred Savage is hilarious in it. That's my plug. So,
well, I even look at Austin Powers when he pops up in that or something like that. Yeah. Like, he's always hilarious
for sure.
Well, there we go. That is Little Monsters. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 6.1 out of 10. Has a Metascore of None listed? What Uh-oh. The fuck? Doesn't even have a Metascore. It didn't even break $1 million, and it doesn't have a Metascore. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 44% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 62%. Oh, yeah, no, that wasn't me forgetting to fill out my notes. That was, like, literally on IMDb, there was no Metascore listed. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, a bed falling on top of your broken horn. I don't know. Fuck. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. I found an amazing review from Abigail McNeil on Google. She gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "I love Howie, but sadly he was better in Deal or No Deal. He had a lot of character, but the kid was too childish for my liking. I love the leather, Howie. Keep it up. You're my favorite bald guy. My dad is my second. Your soul patch brightens my soul. I feel like if it walked off your face today, it would play soul music with Uncle Cracker. Speaking of Uncle Cracker, he should have done a feature in this movie. It was bring an ambiance most epic dog, but it is a good movie, Hootie. Don't forget, keep blowing that fish. ILY, I don't know what that means. And to me, this is a no deal. America does not have talent, only the Canadians like you and Letterkenny. And Mr. Leahy, I must go now, my bagel bites are burning."
Ah. I'm speechless. Speechless. Yeah.
The best part of that review is that 7 people found this helpful.
Oh, okay. Fantastic.
Okay.
Like they realize that the helpful, not helpful is actually something that IMDb is trying to gauge about whether the comment should be on there. It's not a like button, right? Like they know that, right?
Yeah.
Those 7 people used it as a like button of, oh, this guy was tripping balls. So...
Derek Deskins, who's a reviewer with Edge Media Network, said, "It is 100 minutes of nails on a chalkboard, and in a more just world would have resulted in the end of Howie Mandel's career."
Ouch! Like, so many Howie Mandel haters. Holy cow.
A nameless reviewer gave the movie 2.5 out of 5 stars and says, "This is one of those ones from your childhood that you probably shouldn't revisit. Keep the fond memories where they are. It sets up pretty cool little monster world that I have to believe Pixar ripped off at least a little, but it's a bit too mean-spirited at times, and a bunch of the monsters are just obnoxious and overwhelmingly annoying. Makes it a hard sit-through. I could see kids still loving this, though."
Hmm. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, every kid still likes fart jokes. My God, my son died laughing when I told him to pull my finger the other day.
Nice. Joshua M. gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars and says, "First and foremost, this is absolutely not a kid's movie. It has very strong language with words like damn, hell, piss, and even crude euphemisms for masturbation, and even a bra.
What?
It promotes delinquency and disrespect for authority, and arguably could be a gateway to interest in the occult." "That being said, my wife and I are both huge Howie Mandel fans, so we watched it one night after putting the kids to bed, and we both enjoyed it." "While the raunchy and inappropriate content can be a little upsetting at times, if you're feeling a little mischievous, it can be a very entertaining romp. We both were feeling very frisky being so naughty. So all in all, it made for a great night."
What? Whoa, so someone's lady got in the mood that night, huh?
Damn.
Whew, jeez.
And then this last review comes from Jordan H., who gave the movie...
It's Spanish Fly. Little... Yeah. "Caution, may cause panty wetness." That's what it should say on the box. Fuck. Sorry.
No problem. The last review is from Jordan H., who gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "I liked it when the large boy drinks the piss."
Too funny. Nice. So, yeah, we've got 6.1 and no Metascore, and 44 and 62. So, like, the audiences are around 60%.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to say about Little Monsters. I don't think I like it very much. I think just straight up, that's the best way to put it, is I loved this as a child, and boy, I do not love it anymore. It had its moments. The Rotten Tomatoes, 44% from critics, that's even a little bit high for me. Like, I'd probably be like, I'm like a 3 out of 10 on this one. Maybe 3.5 out of 10. I'm glad I saw it again. I almost need a t-shirt. We almost need merch that just says, I'm glad I revisited this, but I'll probably never watch it again. I know I've said that exact phrase in multiple other episodes, but that's how I feel about this one. It's not a very good movie, in my opinion. Colin, you weren't sure whether it was going to be your first viewing of Little Monsters. Turns out it probably was. What did you think of your experience with Little Monsters? Is this another Monster Squad?
I mean, this movie makes Monster Squad look like an Oscar winner, in my opinion.
Okay.
I would say, like, I would watch Monster Squad 100 times before I watch this movie ever again. Like,
yeah,
I find there's nothing really going on in this movie of interest.
Yeah, see, I will say, in the same vein as what you just said about Monster Squad, I feel like I would revisit Drop Dead Fred before I revisited this again. Like, yeah. I would give Drop Dead Fred another honest chance, just because I don't have a lot of childhood attachment to it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think Little Monsters was just kind of, it wasn't at all what I expected, and in kind of a bad way. Like, I think the movie that I expected was a better movie than what I got. I just thought.
Okay.
I actually thought Fred Savage, like, I would say that the good points are Fred Savage and Ben Savage. It was fun to see him. And the relationships between the kids I liked.
Yeah.
But I think Maurice is kind of meant to be the driving force of the movie.
Yeah.
And he just falls, completely flat for me.
Yeah, he's not likable enough.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, and, like, I even look at, like, the parents, too. I thought they gave great performances.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just in the wrong movie.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
This should not be in this movie. It should be in something far more dramatic.
Yeah. I don't know. I just didn't think, like, and even things just don't, it doesn't really end in a way. The story I just found, as soon as it became more about, like, there's just not enough is explained, I think, is the best way I can say it. Like, there's just kind of, like, things... It's one of those movies where things just happen and you're kind of expected to just go for it. But when you're trying to, like, watch a movie critically, I think this is one where that type of movie just completely falls to pieces.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, there we go. That's Little Monsters, and that's our show for this week. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is just tell people. Share our posts, or tell a friend that, hey, there's this podcast I like, maybe you'll like it. Word of mouth goes a far way for a podcast trying to get their name out there. Or if you want to go above and beyond, you can go give us a review on whatever platform it is you listen to your podcasts on. Or if you want to be our gosh darn heroes, if you want to be a financial supporter of the show, become an executive producer and get a shout out, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. And you become a producer of the show, and you get a shout-out just like Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our social media pages. We have Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. And if you want to write us, you can do so by sending an email to IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.